Bibles then this morning to Exodus chapter 20. Exodus chapter 20. We'll look at verse 16 here in a second. Exodus chapter 20. No, I don't have a formal handout, but that doesn't mean you're not allowed to take notes. You can still take notes if you want or not. It's up to you. But Exodus chapter 20. Did I ever tell you when someone gives me a handout, I don't use it? I never do. I always use a moleskin. It's the best. Right? I can tell you more about moleskins later, but they're awesome. They're black journals that you can write in. Exodus chapter 20, though, verse 16. Today we're going to talk about the topic of lying. You know, lying is one of the most prevalent moral problems we face. Every person on the planet, at times, can be an Oscar-winning liar. Really good at it. In fact, Romans 3 put it this way. As it is written, there is none righteous, no, not one. Their throat is an open sepulcher. With their tongues they have used deceit. In other words, everybody's a liar. And lying affects everyone immediately. In fact, there have been studies to indicate, there was a study by James Patterson and Peter King in a book called The Day America Told the Truth. And in that study they found 91% of Americans lie on a daily basis. 86% of children lie regularly to their parents. 75% lie on a regular basis to their friends. 73% lie on a regular basis to their siblings. The tough thing about lying, though, is what Martin Luther said about it. A lie is like a snowball. The longer it is rolled on the ground, the larger it becomes. You know, I just preached at the Wilds of New England. They know a thing or two about getting snow and lots of it in New England. Indiana, we get snow, but you might feel like you get a lot of snow, but I got to be honest. I grew up in New Hampshire. We got 120 inches of snow a winter. You guys get in Indiana, we get roughly 30 to 40 inches a winter. So it's a little bit different. Right, and I asked the kids when I was even talking about it how lies can snowball on top of each other. I asked, how many know the difference between snowman snow and skiing snow? Anybody know the difference between snowman snow and skiing snow? Anybody know what I'm talking about? Immediately. How many have no idea you never even knew that there was such a thing? How many thought that? Right? All right. Snowman snow is the wet, heavy snow that packs on top of each other. Right? Now you know what I'm talking about? Skiing snow is the dry, fluffy stuff that you can have like powder, right, on. Rachel grew up in Colorado. They have skiing snow, the best kind, right, like just the powder snow. And then there's snowman snow. Martin Luther said, hey, when you tell a lie, it's like starting to roll a snowball. And every time you push it over one more time, it just grows on top of itself. And you actually create a trap for yourself because it gets bigger and bigger the more you cling to the lie you told in the first place. In other words, you tell one lie, you're going to have to tell another to cover that lie, and so on. The Bible has a lot to say about lying. In fact, lying actually made it into the Ten Commandments, as it being something that was expressly forbidden by God. But Jesus, even before we get to that Ten Commandment, draws a correlation between lying and the workings of the devil. In fact, in John 8:44, Jesus said, ye are of the father the devil, and the lust of your father ye will do. He was a murderer from the beginning, and abode not in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he speaketh a lie, he speaketh of his own, for he is a liar and the father of it. In other words, the thing that you can do on earth that would make you most like Satan is to tell a lie. Perhaps that's why we can see in Exodus chapter 20, verse 16, in the midst of the Ten Commandments, we read the ninth of those Ten Commandments in Exodus chapter 20, verse 16, when it says, thou shalt not bear false witness. In one sense, this verse is talking about legal justice. Right? In a day where they didn't have CSI or forensic evidence or a paid detective to find out the truth, justice rose or fell on the testimony of eyewitnesses. And so, in the Ten Commandments, just like in our day, things were resolved by a witness who stood before the court and said, I saw such and such. And so the commandment is, don't lie on the stand. Don't bear false witness. The whole point is God wants you to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth. That is what God commands and demands and expects. Expects that you be a truthful person. And yet, we can obviously see, even in demonstration by statistics, that lying has become so prevalent, many Christians even do not look at lying as the grievous sin that it is. In fact, we're used to being lied to. When the political season comes around, anybody actually believe everything the politician was telling you on that commercial? We're like, oh, wow, that's such a great guy. He's telling 100% of everything that he's going to do, right? No, of course not. Or maybe you turn on the TV and it's like a commercial for some weight loss drug. It's like, you will 100% guaranteed lose 10 pounds. You're like, wow, that's amazing. I'm sure that works exactly as they say it is, right? No, of course not. You're not gullible, I hope. We are used to being lied to. Politicians lie to us. Advertisers lie to us to sell us products. Misleading others is common. In fact, sometimes dubbed good business. But God includes lying as one of the Ten Commandments for good reason. He takes lying very, very seriously. In fact, honesty and truthfulness are a crucial element to the Christian life, and without it, you can't possibly claim to be walking with God, at least not closely. It is because we serve a truth-filled God that we must be truth-filled disciples. Are you truly an honest person? Or do you have to question and wonder whether or not you were genuine in what you were saying? Is your word as good as your signature? Do you do what you say and say what you do? Do you tell the truth no matter what cost it may have on you personally? You may be able to fool the public. You may be able to fool your friends or your family, but you can't fool God. Are you a truthful person? Today I'd like to spend our time together asking some questions about lying. So I want us to discover why it's so bad exactly and how we can stop it. But in order to do that, we have to ask this first question. What is lying? You know, the root idea of lying is obviously falsehood or deception. We could really define lying this way. A lie is to say what is untrue or not say all that is true. So what I want you to do is look at four areas then where a lie could be prevalent in your life. I do not claim to think that these areas are exhaustive. We could certainly add to them. But at least four areas where it's prevalent that the ninth commandment, thou shalt not bear false witness, could be broken in our daily lives. Different types of lies, if you will. There are three areas I can see right out in the outset from Scripture that are violations of this ninth commandment. Number one, flattery is actually lying. Psalm 12, verse 2 says, they speak everyone with his neighbor with flattering lips, and with a double heart they speak. You know, Scripture talks about a double mind, a double spirit, and a double heart. He's saying flattery is a lie. He asks you, do you like my shirt today? Isn't that super cool? Right? My suit coat, it's pretty awesome, I guess, right? Now, would you mind coming with me and buying me a milkshake, right? Right? That one, I'm not very good at flattering in that illustration, obviously. What is flattery? Flattery is insincere or excessive praise that is intended to manipulate. We know what flattery looks like. In fact, we even have names for people that are being flatterers, right? We call them kiss-ups, or brown-nosers, or the teacher's pet, right? Their story goes something like this, right? They come into class and they're like, hey, teacher, you look awesome. Here's an apple. You're the best teacher ever. Can you give me an A on that test? You know? It's flattery. Some of you actually have carved out a really nice reputation for yourself that is predicated in large part on flattery. You have at least in some way puffed yourself up to be something you're really not, all because you want to be perhaps accepted, even by most times someone older than you or someone you respect. Flattery is a violation then of the ninth commandment because it's not saying what is true. You're saying what they want to hear so you can manipulate and motivate their heart in your own dishonest plan. Flattery is different than encouragement in this light. The person is using flattery is not using it for the good of the other person, but for their own good. They're saying these things so that they may get their way. They're the teacher's pet, the brown noser. Yeah, that is actually a form of lying. It's a violation of this ninth commandment. There's another kind of lying we can see in Scripture, and that is deception. This is a subtle form of lying. 1 John 3, verse 7 says, "Little children, let no man deceive you." John is writing this verse when he's almost 100 years old. He wrote the book of 1 John. And so, by virtue of the fact that he's so old, he's obviously writing to people that are pretty much younger than him, because there's few people that would be older than 90. And so he's looking at the church, and he's looking at all the younger people in the church, and he has a concern for them. He's concerned that they would be easily manipulated or deceived. And so he calls them children. It's fair, I think, to say, I think you'd agree, that children are easily manipulated, right? It says gullible on the ceiling. Did you know that right now? It says gullible. Right? It's pretty easy to kind of bring a kid to do your plan, your bidding. Perhaps you have a little brother or a sister, right? And you might try to get them to do something is wrong, to get them in trouble. What is deception? Deception is where we twist what is truth to make it mean something totally different. Deception is demonic. Our first parents, Adam and Eve, were deceived by the serpent in the garden when he came and he twisted something that was true to mean something totally different. It was a lie, but it was packaged in truth. Remember when I was one summer when I was little, my friend came over and invited me to go play at his house, and he had like a pool, and we're going to play, I don't know what we're going to do. I came to my mom. I said, "Hey, I'm going to get on my bike. We're going to go over to my friend's house. Is that okay?" And my mom said, "Sure, as long as your room is clean." And so I said, "It that's great. You know, Mom, my room should be clean." And she said, "Okay, you're good to go." So I did. I left. Right? It was awesome. We had fun with our friends, right? Playing in his pool, whatever. I came back that night, and there was my dad, looking rather stern. And I knew I was in trouble when you get the look. You know what I'm talking about? Right? And I knew I had a problem. And my dad said, "You lied to your mother." I said, "I didn't lie to my mother. I said it should be clean." And we can all agree that it should be. It's just not, right? That is a deception. Deception is not telling the whole truth. It's omitting a few facts. It's exaggerating to make a point. We're good at deception, right? We know how to tell a story or make your case in a certain way as to code it so you come out the hero in the end. Let me ask you some things like this. Is it possible for a student to deceive and violate the ninth commandment by plagiarizing something and turning it in as their own work? Is that a lie? Is that a violation of the ninth commandment? Yes. It's deception. It's pretending that that work is your own when it's not your own. Remember when I was in college, I've told you this before, but I'll tell you again, when I was in college, I got called in to the dean's office. That's the equivalent of being called into the principal's office, except for worse, because deans don't talk to you, except for if there's a problem. So I got called into the dean's office, I didn't know what for, and he sat me down and he said, "Were you plagiarizing your paper?" Now, in high school, you might get a pass with plagiarizing. Unlikely, but if you do, thank your lucky charms. If I was your teacher, I'd kick you out. Because in college, if you plagiarize once, this is fair, if you plagiarize once, you're done. You'll get kicked out of college, and you'll have a very hard time getting in any other college because it'll be forever on your record that you plagiarized. So it's a pretty serious accusation, would you not say? I said, "No, I didn't plagiarize." And come to find out, they did some research. They have cameras and things. And some guy had snuck into my room and grabbed my flash drive where I had saved all of my papers and stolen my flash drive, stole one of my papers for a class off that flash drive, chained the name at the top of the paper, and turned it in as his own, which is a really dumb thing to do at a university because you don't turn in paper copies at university colleges. You turn them in online, and the reason you turn them in online is there's this thing called an automatic plagiarism checker, for real, where it surfs all of the internet and every paper that's ever been turned in from every accredited school, period. So when he turned in my paper as his own, it came back with the plagiarism checker 100% plagiarized, right? Every word was mine. I don't know what happened to that guy. I know he didn't get to stay at that school. I'm guessing he just had to go to a technical school. I don't know what's going to happen to him. But he's in trouble. That's a bad thing. It's deception. Plagiarism is deception. We understand that. But there's other kinds of deception that take place in the classroom that are not as easily caught as plagiarism. By the way, if you get caught plagiarizing, let me just encourage you, don't stop. It's really bad. You will mess up your life if you plagiarize. But what about a student in a classroom who cheats on a test, right? We know what it's like to sit in a classroom and have cover sheets and one person isn't very good at covering their test. And you glance over, perhaps intentionally so, and you see the answer, and the answer is correct because that person you know is smart, and they always get 100, so you just borrow that answer. What did you do? It's deception. Those are not your answers. You cheated. You are lying about your answers. So flattery is lying. Deception is lying. Do you know that slander is also lying? Leviticus 19:16 says, "You shall not go around as a talebearer or a slanderer among your people." Slander is malicious and often false information used to inflict harm on others. Some of you are case builders, and you're looking for stones to collect so you can throw them at someone else. You are arranging information so that you can impugn and attack someone's character because you've already decided that that person is your enemy, and so you'll talk badly about that person either right in front of their face or certainly behind their back. In our day, the opportunity to slander people may be more easily and readily available than perhaps any day in human history. Communication today is instant, constant, global, and permanent. It is instant. The moment you feel insulted, you can type your feelings into your phone and either tweet them, Snapchat them, or text someone, whatever. It's instant. You can do it right away. It's constant. In many cases, when you send something out, you started a thread that someone else can join in on, and someone else can join in on with them. And soon, there's a whole list of people that are joining you in this slander. It's global. Obviously, you in Indiana can actually say something that someone across the world can hear if you really wanted to. And it's permanent. Once you put something online, it's out there forever. This is particularly concerning in the age of social media. There's even a name for this kind of slander. They call it cyberbullying. Cyberbullying is bullying that takes place over digital devices like cell phones, computers, and tablets. In fact, in 2015, the National Center for Education Statistics and Bureau of Justice Systems indicated that nationwide, 21% of grade school students, these are elementary school students, experienced some form of cyberbullying. I didn't take the time to look into teenage statistics, but I'm sure that they would be higher. Let me ask you something. Think about the information you put out there. The words you say, whether on a computer-type device or just the words you say in general, and then think of what Jesus said about words. When Jesus said in Matthew 12, verse 36, "Every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give an account thereof in the day of judgment." How many of you didn't know that Jesus had access to your internet history? Imagine you die and Jesus pulls up all of your internet history and your social media accounts and says, "Okay, we're going to go through all of your Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, YouTube, Twitter posts, and so on. By the way, we're also going to look at your private messages and your texts." How many of you would be just a little bit embarrassed? He says, hey, listen, slander is also a form of lying. And while we may think of it as not that important, we're actually the ones in the wrong here. God has placed the deception and lying right there in the middle of the Ten Commandments to let us know He takes it very seriously, and He's always taken it seriously. So if it's so grotesque and gross, why do we do it? If those are just forms of lying, and those are just three, gossip would be a form of lying as well. So we could continue on that, but those are forms of lying. So why do we do it? What is the motivation for lying? If lying is so evil, why is it still so prevalent? Now the question as to why people lie is profoundly important and somewhat endlessly intriguing. Why do people lie? Well, we lie because we are attempting sometimes to cover up our sin. Many times we lie because we did the wrong thing. We lie to cover up a shortcoming. We put blames on others. We shift responsibility. Think about it. When Abel murdered Cain, he tried to cover it up by lying. King Saul gave such an excuse when he did not comply with God's commands to kill everyone and everything in 1 Samuel 15. First, he lied when he tried to cover it up by shifting the responsibility to the other people. Think about the brothers of Joseph, right? They sold him into slavery. And they take that coat back to their dad and they lie to their dad and say he got killed by some wild beast. What was the end result in each of those cases? In Abel's case, when he lied, he was made to walk the earth as a cursed man for the rest of his life. In King Saul's case, when he lied, he was forced to give up the kingdom and the crown. For the brothers of Joseph, when they lied, they suffered famine and eventual humiliation. You know, you cannot hide your sin from God. You may think you have a secret sin, but there's no such thing as a secret sin. You may think because the pastor doesn't know, God doesn't know. But you might think because your mother doesn't know, God doesn't know. Or your dad doesn't know, God doesn't know. Or your friends believed your lie, so it's okay, it must be true now. No, you can't cover your sin. You know, in a simplistic way, we do this as children, right? We get caught with something, and we immediately start learning good ways to cover up our lies. And normally, we normally figure out which ways don't work by failing as kids. Kids do lie, they're just really bad at it. You ever notice that, right? Like, that's just totally unbelievable, right? That's why they say, like, the dog ate my homework. What if your dog actually did eat your homework, right? Would your teacher believe you? I don't think so. It's been the boy who cried wolf way too much, right? You lie because you sin, and you sin, and you cover it up with a lie, and really you're just perpetuating the problem. But we also lie because we want to be accepted in some way. In the Gospel of Matthew and Luke, we read the account of Peter's betrayal of Christ not once, but three times. Upon Christ's capture and eventual bringing to the justice hall where he would have to be put on trial, Peter would follow Jesus there. And as he's kind of around the campfire, he's sitting there warming himself outside where inside they have the trial. And a young girl, the Bible tells us in the book of Luke chapter 22, is there in the courtyard with him. And in Luke 22, it says in verse 46, a certain maiden beheld him as he sat by the fire and earnestly looked upon him. It wasn't a glance. It was like, I think I've seen you before. And finally she says, this man was also with him. And what does Peter say? In verse 47, he cursed and he said, I am not. Now Peter was obviously lying here. Very clearly was one of the disciples. She even recognized him as such. His own speech betrayed him. Why would he lie about that? He lied about it in a desperate attempt to be accepted. What drove Peter to deny Christ with such a bold-faced lie was that he wanted to be accepted even by a little maiden girl. What are we so afraid of that compels us to lie? Mostly, I think, we worry for our own reputation. We don't want to be seen in a bad light. Or perhaps we fear punishment and other consequences. Sometimes we lie because we fear facing someone else's disappointment. Many times we tell lies so that others will honor us, because deep down inside we believe that we are otherwise unworthy. In all, we lie because we are motivated by being accepted by peers that don't really matter, honestly. You know, this can really happen when someone moves, right? They get into a new situation and suddenly you get a chance to like paint yourself as something you weren't before. I remember when I was a senior, there was a guy that came and joined our school. And we didn't know who he was. He moved from another state. No clue who this guy was. But, you know, he kind of got a feel that our school, and this was true, the guys just liked football more than anything else. Well, he had never played football before. And so he was going to try to fit into that group. And so he made up this story that he was quite good at running back. Well, again, he had never played before. So he goes out on the field to show us his skills at running back. And it doesn't take long to tell that this guy's only watched football on TV and never actually played. You want to talk about embarrassing. Embarrassing is hitting the sleds and not knowing what you're doing and breaking your finger on the first day because you did the drill the wrong way, all because you were a liar. That's pretty embarrassing. I remember that. That was just that poor guy. I actually kind of felt bad for him. Because honestly, we could fall into that. You know what I mean? Like, we want to be accepted so much, we would rather paint ourselves into a group we don't even belong to than be the outcast. Peter felt that way. Sometimes we lie to cover up our sin. Sometimes we lie to be accepted. Sometimes we lie because we want to take advantage of a situation. In Proverbs 11, verse 1, the Bible tells us, "A false balance is an abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is His delight." You see, in that day, they would go to the marketplaces and they would buy different foods in the marketplace, and in order to determine how much something costs, they would weigh it. It's very similar to how we do it, even in the produce aisles at your grocery store today, right? You get your bunch of bananas or whatever, and you put it on the scale, and you buy that bunch of bananas based on how much it weighs. Well, imagine if someone somehow put rocks, I don't even know if that's possible, but somehow they put rocks in the banana peels, right? So you buy a heavier banana bunch, right? You were deceived, right? You were lied to. Apparently, in this day, they would do that. They would sell someone a basket of wheat, perhaps, and they would put some dirt or what have you at the bottom of it to make that basket weigh more than it actually did. And in so doing, they would take advantage of people, and they would lie. You know, you say, well, I don't work in a marketplace and sell wheat on a basket. But have you ever tried to take advantage of a situation by withholding some of the truth or covering it up in parts? Perhaps you want to look better in someone's eyes, so you add a little luster to your story. Perhaps you didn't do your homework, but you just say, I forgot it at home, right? Perhaps you know you're going to fail a test because you didn't study, but you might even just sit there next to your friend who did study and say, oh, yeah, I really did study. It's just too much. It's just a little bit of a tweaking of the truth, but it's still a lie. I'm taking advantage of a situation by manipulating the facts to make myself look good. Why do we lie? Well, clearly there's more than just those three motivations, but we can lie because of those motivations. So what is the result then? Where does this bring us to? What is the eventual end? God warns us not to lie, but we simply don't listen. And I think because of that, we fall prey to the fact that we don't even realize exactly how seriously lying is. You know, lying lips are, in fact, disgusting to God. We know and we can appreciate that God doesn't lie. Many places in Scripture we are told that. Titus 1 verse 2, for example, speaks of a God who never lies. Lying is contrary to God's essence. It is disgusting to Him. It's like taking those most sparkling, clean piece of glass and rubbing manure all over it. It's gross. It shouldn't happen. In fact, Proverbs would put it this way. These six things of the Lord hate, yea, seven are abomination to Him. A lying tongue and a false witness that speaks lies. Both of those are listed. Literally, lying is listed twice in these 6 to 7 things that the God hates above all else. Proverbs 12 verse 22 says, lying lips are an abomination to God. They are gross. They are disgusting to Him. Anybody hate bad smells? Right? I don't think anybody hates bad smells more than me, I gotta be honest. And you know this, but I could not breathe out of my nose till I was 16. When I was 16, I had surgery on my nose, and for the first time in my life, I could smell. It was awesome, right? Then I broke my nose several more times and had to have surgery again. Don't break my nose, new seventh graders. The other people know this, but if I break my nose again, I have to have total reconstructive nose surgery because there's not enough up there to fix it anymore. So I've been looking at options in the room, which nose I would like, right? I could just take a picture of your nose and give it to me. I'm just kidding. And I wouldn't have to get a new nose, right? But I remember the first time I finally smelled. It was like, wow, cookies actually smell good. And bathrooms don't, right? I had a roommate. You know about the roommate, right? That just hardly ever took showers my freshman year. He was so gross, his stench would wake you up at night. It was nasty, right? God says, hey, you want to know how much I hate lying? It is repulsive. It is disgusting. It is gross. That's why Jesus would say in Matthew chapter 5, you need to make sure to let your yes be yes and your no be no. And anything in between there, Matthew 5 verse 37, is described as evil. Lying lips are disgusting, and lying lips will be judged. God's hatred for lying was dramatically demonstrated in the early first century church. In Acts chapter 5, we read the story of how they're bringing their offerings to the first century church and bringing them in. And there were two people, Ananias and Sapphira, who actually sold a portion of their land. And when they sold a portion of their land, they kept a part of it back, which is fine. But then they brought the rest of it in and lied and said, we're giving all of our proceeds to the Lord, which wasn't true. It would have been just better off. They needed to keep a portion of it off to maybe pay off some debts in their own life and give another portion to the Lord. That's fine. A lot of people do that. But it was the lying that's being judged here. What happened in that story? Acts chapter 5, it says, but a certain man named Ananias and Sapphira with his wife sold a possession and kept back part of the price, his wife also being privy to it. They both knew. It was a plan they got together. And they brought a certain part and laid it to the apostles' feet. But Peter said, Ananias, why hath Satan filled thine heart to lie to the Holy Ghost and keep back a part of the piece of the land? Whilst it remained, was it not thine own? And after it was sold, was it not thine own power? Why hast thou conceived this thing in thine heart? Thou hast not lied unto men, but unto God. And Ananias, hearing these words, fell down and gave up the ghost. And great fear came on all those who heard those things. You better believe great fear. I bet for the next few years, no one was lying in the apostles' office. You know what I'm talking about? Because the last guy who lied died, and his wife did the same. Why is that story told to us? It's not an Old Testament story. Sometimes we look at Old Testament stories, we see, yeah, well, that was the Old Testament, right? We live in the New Testament age. As if to say it's different and whatever. This is a New Testament story. You do understand that, right? And this New Testament church age story is letting you know God takes lying so very seriously, it will be judged, and in this case, quite severely. Revelation 21:27 says, and there shall in no wise enter into heaven anything that defileth, neither whatsoever worketh abomination or maketh lies. Psalm 120 verse 2 says then, deliver my soul, O Lord, from lying lips and a deceitful tongue. Every lie is an abomination and disgusting to God, but every lie will be judged. Lies are serious, very serious. Did you know that Jesus died because of a lie? Yeah, he died because people lied about him and falsely accused him. But he also died because of the lie that the serpent, gave to Eve in the garden to eat the forbidden fruit. And now we live in a fallen planet that is gripped by lies. And yet lies have become so prevalent and are so commonplace, many Christians do not look on lying as such a grievous sin that it really is. Together we should say with the Apostle Paul, "Wherefore, putting away lying, let every man speak truth with his neighbor, for we are members one of another." We should ask, how can I stop lying? I stop lying when I decide and choose to obey God. When Paul said in 1 Ephesians 4, verse 25, "Wherefore, putting away lying," he didn't say, "Wherefore, going to a therapist and trying to figure out why you're prone to lying," nor does he say, "Wherefore, praying for victory in this area." Rather, he says, "Wherefore, stop lying." We don't need any new revelation about this. This is pretty much cut and dry here, folks, right? Tell the truth. That's pretty much it. Like, that doesn't need a real strong explanation here. Don't lie. Choose to obey what's already been given to you. Don't make this any more complicated than it has to be. And commit to not lying. You must decide not to lie before you get into a situation where you're tempted to lie. Paul says in Ephesians 4 that we cast aside lying. Wherefore, putting away lying, casting it aside. The imagery is throwing off dirty clothing, getting it away, burning it perhaps. You have to choose to not lie before you ever get into a position where you are tempted to do so. Some of us are tempted to lies in different ways. Some of us are more tempted to flattery than we are deceit. Or some of us are more tempted to slander than we are any of the other two. We have to choose before we get into those situations to commit to not lying and courageously tell the truth. Choose to tell the truth and not to lie even when the truth makes you look bad. Usually we lie because the truth will expose our sin, or we fear that somehow by being honest we'll look bad. But if we cast aside lying and choose to follow God in obedience, then we will courageously tell the truth, even if it hurts us the most. And because you serve the God of truth, you need to be a person of truth. So lay aside falsehood and speak truth. Recognize the source of truth and live for that source. 1 Peter 3 verse 10 says, "For he that will love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking guile."